Here we are on a Friday visiting First Out of the Gate with Michael Miller, the Associate Professor of Economics, joining us again from DePaul University. Professor, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you, John, on this lovely Friday, huh?
Yeah, amen to that. So a lot of our guests the last week or two have been talking about the jobs report. Unemployment is down to 5.8%, and most of them are telling me that that glass is half full. That's not a great number, considering the number of unemployed, but it's better than it has been. Are you in that camp?
Yeah, I see two things here. Actually, three. When this all began, we thought we would have double-digit inflation for a year or two, and certainly we've made so much more progress than we thought. And the unemployment rate is falling much more quickly than anybody expected. But, you know, we still have 3.6 million Americans who are unemployed, you know, more than we had at the time the pandemic began. And we have to concern ourselves with that. So it's one of those things that the economy is moving in the right direction. And it appears like clearly the pandemic cycle is over, but we're not completely back to normal. And we got to always remember that. I think that's why the Fed will continue to keep interest rates low, at least for probably the remainder of this year. And I don't expect, however, the government will be able to get too much more than $1 trillion maybe of infrastructure through the Congress.
It's pretty, I don't know if it's surprising, but I have been reading more, I guess we all have, about how that infrastructure bill has just stalled. And one of the sticking points might be what the corporate tax rate is. You want to forecast how this thing is going to break down for me?
Boy, it'd be better to talk to people who study politics, but it seems to me that the idea that we would need a massive stimulus, it's over because the economy is doing as well as it is. But we also could use some infrastructure focus, roads and bridges. I think what is going to happen is that they're going to focus on more traditional definitions of it. And they're going to make it clear that this is kind of a 10-year program. We're not going to spend all $1 trillion in 1 year. And I think that Congress will get something through. It just won't be the $2 or $3 trillion that the president was looking for.
Rising wages are a good thing or a bad thing right now?
I'll tell you, the last time we had this discussion was in the 1990s, and workers were finally getting their due. They were getting very nice raises to match the productivity that they had. And what people did is they focused their attention that these rising wages were going to cause inflation. And there is just no empirical evidence anywhere that that is the case. Workers are paid based upon their productivity. Sometimes those wages lag behind. And when the wages finally go back up and match the productivity, that is not in any way inflationary. And there's no evidence that I have seen that increasing wages cause inflation. In fact, it's the other way around. Inflation occurs first, and then the workers have to respond by demanding higher wages to pay their bills. So it isn't a wage-price spiral, it's a price-wage spiral. Not that I expect inflation to last long in terms of this higher rate, but to blame the workers and to say that we need to become concerned because the workers are getting their cut of the pie, that's just not right. There's just no empirical evidence to support that.
That's a different way to spin it than some people do, though. They say it's not that they're finally getting their share of the pie, it's that they're demanding more pie, that in fact they just won't go back to work, and that it positively is inflationary. How is that not the case?
Well, I guess, I'm sorry, I just, again, if the work, if the money is justified by the productivity, what if, for example, you know, we have this issue now where we're going to allow inflation to run a little bit above 2%, because for many years we have had inflation well below 2%. What if your wage increases have been subpar for a long time, but your productivity has continued to rise? Then you get this gap between how much value you bring to the market and what you're being paid. Eventually, the market will correct, and that's what we're seeing now, I think, is that the workers are finally having a little bit of a negotiating power, and they can say, I'm not coming to work unless I'm paid something that's consistent with what I bring to the table.
Does this address... finish that thought, Professor. Pardon me.
Yeah, so I think that I actually am pleased to see that the workers are in this position now. They were in the same position in the late 1990s when unemployment went to the lowest rate it had been in years, and certainly inflation did not follow that particular episode, which was consistent with what we have found over the many years, that inflation is not caused by workers getting larger wages.
We're talking to Michael Miller, the Associate Professor of Economics at DePaul. We'll update you on a few things here, including a look at the markets with Bob Kessler and come back. And when we do, I also want to talk about the fact that several states are, in fact, not going to give the unemployment surplus. What's the professor say about that? They're holding it back. We aren't doing that in Illinois. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Thanks for dialing us in. Michael Miller is an associate professor of economics at DePaul University. We're talking a little bit about some of the good news out there. The professor sounds pretty bullish about the economy. You are optimistic, right, Michael?
I am. I do think that these growth rates, which are very impressive, partly caused by a rise in entrepreneurial activity and the stimulus that is being given by both the Fed and the federal government. But I think we're going to return in the long run back down to our long run growth rate of about 2%. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I'd like to have more growth than that, but the case is you don't want to have growth which is greater than you can produce for. You don't want the economy to overheat, and you don't want it to underperform. And I think we're on track to get back to that long run rate. So I'm positive that we're not heading for any kind of recession or a crash. And I think I'm becoming more and more like the financial markets are, that inflation is going to be a transitory phenomenon caused by some unique conditions caused by the pandemic and supply chain problems and so forth.
Right. Where was unemployment before the pandemic? What were we at?
Oh, we were about 3.5, 3.7. I mean, that was historic. That was 60-year lows. If we would get somewhere in the low fours, I think that would be just fine. If you look at the size of the labor market, you also look at the changes which are occurring because of people like me, the baby boomers. As baby boomers change their labor plans and leave the labor market, that's going to change the number of people available to work. So I'm thinking that if unemployment can come down another at least 1 full percent, maybe more like 1.5%, we would be in an ideal position.
We're at 5.8 right now.
Yeah, we're at 5.8.
Where are you on this, Professor? What about the 25 states that do have access to federal unemployment surplus benefits but are not passing those along? What's your thought about that, and what should Illinois be doing with the extra $300 a week?
Well, you know, I'm kind of torn. There's lots of people who are obviously still in need. When you look at all the progress we've made, we still realize that there are still millions of Americans who are in need. And I'd hate to, you know, if the money is there and it's already been allotted, I'm not sure exactly why you would not want to give it to them. But at the same time, I always have the concern that that a lot of people are going to see this as being unfair, and that could lead to some divisions in that people who are not working are making as much or more as those who are working. We do know from, again, when you mentioned through an email what you wanted to talk about today, I looked through some of the research again to try to figure out exactly what this connection is between the unemployment compensation and people's willingness to work. And there's no doubt that it adds to the unemployment rate a little, maybe 0.5%, but it doesn't affect the long-run participation rate. In other words, it doesn't push people out of the labor market. It's simply a transitory phenomenon that affects different people at different times. I think the states are concerned that unemployment will remain higher in their state if they keep giving people these extra dollars. I think that people realize that these dollars are temporary, and we will not know the true connection between this compensation and the unemployment rate for maybe a year or two when the research is done, and we can look back and figure out exactly what happened. But we are going to have to, you know, another thing that's very big with unemployment comp is the health effects. The health effects are very positive, in that people have the money to meet their medical needs and so forth that they wouldn't. The first thing to go when you have very little money in your income, a lot of people are cut back on medical spending. So there are positive health effects that go along with unemployment compensation, and I think these states need to take that into account in making their decisions.
little bit ago, you talked about the workers getting their fair share of the pie, or at least a bigger cut of it, as they should. They deserve it. Is much being done about closing the income gap between the highest paid people and the lowest paid people? And is that a concern of yours?
It is a concern if the reason for the difference is some structural problem that people are held down due to, you know, in the old days we would focus upon sexism and racism. If, however, we see that it's just because people make different life decisions to go to school or not go to school, to take chances or not take chances, I'm not as concerned about income maldistribution. However, there's one thing I think we have to recognize. To really close that gap, we need the people on the bottom to be making more money. And that's partly why I'm happy about the workers, in a sense, exercising their power to demand this these increases in benefits and wages, because that will bring up the bottom. Remember, right before the pandemic began, the growth rate of wages among the lowest paid was a much faster pace of growth than among the higher paid. And the pandemic put an end to that, unfortunately. But we did see that the people at the bottom, as in March of 2020, their increases were becoming much more substantial percentage-wise. Than we were seeing for the people who were rich.
I understand that, but I want to say this and see what you say about it, because maybe it is structural. That is, I forget what the number is, but the multiplier between the CEOs and the average employees in this country is a huge number. You may know it off the top of your head. And I don't know that those were life choices that put those people into those spots, but maybe there are. It is structural. It is institutional. Those people on the top really aren't that much smarter or more, quote-unquote, deserving of that money, but because of the way our economy and our country is structured, some people are going to fall into those roles more easily than others, and that's a structural difference.
I always want to have a lot of faith in the market. I believe that the market is a better decision maker than the government. But you know, I've been kicked in the face with that many times in the recent past, since the Great Recession of 2007. Lots of things that I would have thought the market was going to be the corrector, that it would take care of things, it didn't always work out. And I am a little concerned, certainly when it comes to for something like CEO compensation and so forth. It does seem to be odd. I mean, that ratio is not, there's no scientific reason why that ratio is important, but it is a number that we can use to get some idea about the people that are in the wearing the suits versus those who are wearing the overalls. What will be the difference between them? They all have, you know, a part to play in the firm, and they should all partake in the returns that they make from selling products. And so I think there is some concern to be had. There's just no research to show that sexism or racism are having substantial effects upon. But these kinds of relationships like you're talking about, by CEOs and people who have power versus those who don't, that is a concern.
Mm. I have 60 seconds left. You know who I wish I was? The guy who a year and a half ago thought, I'm going to make a lot more chlorine. I love how the things are connected. But you know what I'm about to say? Pandemic happens. Everybody is sequestered. Therefore, they can't go to their swimming pools. So what do? They all run out and buy swimming pools or build swimming pools, and swimming pool makers are having a heyday. And you know what that means? You got to put water and chlorine in there. And so when the pandemic started, I wonder if the guy who makes and sells chlorine realized that he was going to get rich in about a year, because everybody will have their own pool, and now there's a run on chlorine. Who knew, Professor?
Oh my gosh.
You should have called me and told me to invest in chlorine.
Yes, you know, I wish I could have done that with sanitized wipes or whatever, you know, and just think of what we could have got for them on our, you know, like instead of having a lemonade stand, we could have sold.
Yeah,
we could have sold those wipes. Man, we could have made a fortune.
Michael Miller is an associate professor of economics. He's at DePaul University. Send your kids there. All right, Michael, nice to talk to you. Thanks for your time today.
Same here. Thank you.
Frequently at this time, we like to talk about an individual business in Chicagoland. And today we do with Mark Thomas, the owner and founder of The Alley at TheAlleyChicago.com. They have a new address. Before we put Mark on, I just want to read part of his bio about how he came to being the businessman and the iconic counterculture seller in Chicago that he is. He wrote, go back in time to 1971. It was a crazy year. Vietnam War was on everyone's mind. The 70s was the beginning of the Me Generation, and the sexual revolution continued into this decade. It was on a cold Thursday, December 16th to be exact, that a cocky 17-year-old kid found his way into the posh Oak Trust and Savings Bank and purchased a $1,725 cashier's check with money that he had earmarked for his college education. This cocky kid already had one failed business, candle making, 3 months earlier under his belt, but he had big dreams for himself in the business world. Hey, Mark Thomas, I love that story. Let's make a movie about you, okay?
I don't know if I'm movie stuff, but I'm a great storyteller.
Amen to that. And obviously a successful business person for The Alley, which has a new location. We want to talk a little bit about that and how you all have been doing. Sure. What do we find at The Alley?
Well, you know, we've been known for years for shoes. You know, we were in the lead of the Dr. Martens revolution in the 80s, and today, you know, it's kind of middle of the road. So, you know, we're out there with some crazy shoes from, we're bringing a line in from London called Koi. We carry Demonia, which is a Gothic brand. Why Are You, Strange Cult. I mean, these are shoes you're not going to find at Nordstrom's. I can tell you that. You know, we've also been a big player in the leather motorcycle business. We've sold probably 30,000 motorcycle jackets in the last, you know, 25 years. And we just started our own brand, FTW USA, which are actually made in the USA leather coats. And we've also done made in the USA FTW t-shirts. So, you know, we have a new brand that The Alley has launched, along with 150 Alley logo shirts and funky goth clothing and probably the largest sterling silver jewelry inventory in 5 states.
You have your 45th anniversary coming up in a new location, too, right?
Yes. Well, it's a new location to the store, but for 20 years, it's kind of been what we call the mothership. So it's where we did our screen printing. It's where we did our web fulfillment. It's where we did our jewelry. You know, I'm a jewelry manufacturer. I bought my jewelry business when I was 17. So, you know, we've been here for 20 years. My wife and I live a half a block away. And, you know, before the pandemic, you know, Lakeview had changed. You know, my gosh, there was a Target on the corner where Punkin' Donuts used to be. And less of our customers were coming from tourism and just people walking down the street. And it was more about a dedicated community from Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And so I've always been a numbers guy. I was watching my numbers. Everybody who paid something at the registry said, how'd you hear about the store today? And so we were tracking. Was it Google? Was it Yelp? Was it Facebook? Got down to the point where there was no foot traffic in Lakeview, who was just happening on The Alley. So I took one of the bigger gambles of my life. And of course, I've always been a huge gambler. And we moved over to the warehouse. And it's been a home run. It has really been terrific.
Home run because you've minimized costs, or are you getting some sort of spontaneous traffic as well?
You know, we got to be up on any given day 20, 25, 30% over what we were doing at Belmont. And I think that's because our social media has gotten better and better and better. And you know what? You know, for better or worse, I've had 8 surgeries over the last 6 years. You know, I've kind of shared my life with my community, and, you know, people know that I just don't give up and I keep coming back and that I love what I do. And I think people, you know, my gosh, I'm 67 years old. I got 65-year-old guys walking in here with a 45-year-old daughter walking in with her 17-year-old child, 3 generations of the same family shopping in The Alley at once. You know, in the old days, kid got caught in The Alley by his mom or his dad, he could be grounded for a month.
And now, so the iconic punk retail shop celebrating 45 years has a special event this weekend at the new Avondale location. Starting at noon on Sunday. You've got all kinds of vendors and stuff like that, huh?
Yeah, so, you know, I've partnered up with the Hardcore Hearst Club and a guy by the name of Scary Perry, who I've been mentoring. And so we have this Oddity and Curiosity Festival. So it's all of these people kind of from the goth culture and you know, who are hand-making things with bugs and all kinds of strange stuff, you know, kind of weird. And we love it. It's who we are. So they're going to be out in the parking lot. We're going to have the Munsters Dragula car for people to come by and see. And we're going to have the bike that Robin rode and Batman in the TV series here. And we made some limited edition T-shirts. There's going to be 45 shirts, tearing the screen up, never make them again. And we're going to be giving away a leather coat every hour on the hour. Nobody has to make a purchase. We're just giving away a leather coat and a bunch of other stuff. I found stuff that were buried in the warehouse. And we're just going to be giving gifts away to people and thanking them for following us and being our loyal fans.
Good for you. I like not only the – how was the pandemic for you then? Were you able to – because you were focusing more on social media, able to maintain your business level?
Here's the good news, and it was kind of strange. So I was in for my third back surgery, got out on March 11th, walked into the store, limped into the store, and everybody was in a panic about COVID. And I looked at my staff, and I said, guys, you know, and I have a little insight into what's going on in the city, and I'm pretty well connected, and, you know, I'm part of the conversations that happens in the business community. I said, this city is going to get closed up in 3-4 days. Let's just call this a day right now. And I closed the store. And I ended up closing about 3 or 4 days earlier than the mayor and the governor closed the city and the state. And I went home and I sat around for 6-7 days trying to get back on my feet. And our website exploded. And literally, we were 2,000% higher than we were a month before. And I was sitting there with ice packs on my back, you know, doing customer service. We only had 3 people in the warehouse. We were printing masks and T-shirts and shipping leather coats. And it was just crazy. So, you know, there are some businesses that did better in the pandemic. And yeah, there are some businesses, you know, I mean, our friends in the restaurant business, the music venue business, the liquor business. So a lot of our friends that just got destroyed. We were in the right place at the right time. We had just rebuilt our website October before the pandemic. And so, you know, it was crazy. And so we were all good. And then, you know, we opened up in June and business was good and made the decision to move over here and business got better.
All right. Good luck to you on Sunday then. That's a great story. This sort of almost capriciousness of who prospers and does not is hard to predict or, you know in advance. I'm glad you guys are hanging in there and doing so well. And again, this Sunday, June 6th, 12 p.m. at their new Avondale location, you can be part of the celebration, 45 years. It's nice to talk to you. Thanks for your time, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I bet. Mark Thomas. Find out more at thealleychicago.com. More business news now on the Business Lunch. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. McDonald's is testing voice ordering technology in drive-thrus at 10 Chicago locations. And the company's CEO says the tests are going well. Computers are collecting orders, not humans, and so far they've been about 85% accurate. 20% of the automated orders have had to be taken over by people. CEO Chris Kremchinski says the voice technology will be scaled across McDonald's drive-thrus in the next 5 years. McDonald's gained access to the voice technology when it acquired artificial intelligence company Apprente in 2019. Boeing is testing whether blasts of air inside the cabins of its aircraft might prevent germs and viruses like COVID-19 from circulating between rows of passengers. The company's installing 20 overhead air vents with special 3D-printed nozzles that create a curtain of air inside one of its new 737 MAX 9 jets. The nozzles are designed to drive air down and away from the breathing area to where the particles can be cleaned and recirculated. If it works, the vents could be added to other aircraft. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The business of food, Steve Alexander.
Well, it's Friday, which means our gardening guru, Jim Fizell, is going to join us again to give you some work assignments for the weekend. The hot weather's back, so are the bugs, so are the weeds.
Well, Steve, there's some things we need to attend to in the garden. First of all, weeds. In the garden, if they are small, pull them out. If they're already big, you need to pull them, get them out of the garden. Don't just leave the ones that you pull in the garden, because many of them will take root and regrow. In the lawn, you want to dig these with a dandelion digger if you just have a few of them. If you have a lot of them, you probably need to apply a turf herbicide. Before you do that, you need to identify the weed. And timing is very important. Some of these weeds need to be sprayed when they're in flower, some of them when they're just growing. So make sure you follow the directions on the label. And don't use them in hot, windy days. Now, we're going to have a few of those, so this is not the time to do that. But if we get a nice, cool day with very little wind, that would be a good time to do that. Now, in the garden, we also have some bugs, especially in the vegetable garden. I've noticed that we've got some tomato plants with just a few aphids on some shoots. No sense bringing out the sprayer to do anything about that. Pick off the individual shoots and put them in a plastic bag and put them in the trash. For things like squash and broccoli, they get squash vine borers and cabbage worms. There's a very simple way of keeping these bugs away from them, and that is to cover them with floating row covers. If you have no choice, you need to dust or spray, but make sure, again, that you use the proper material for the bug you're trying to kill and for the kind of crop that you're spraying. This weekend should be great for being outdoors, even though it's going to be hot. Get the chores done early so you can enjoy just being outdoors.
Yeah, there you go, Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell. By the way, Sunday is National Gardening Exercise Day. It's going to be hot, so be like Jim and get your work and your workout in early. Stay hydrated and wet your plants. Double-digit gains are and losses are the norm now at the Chicago Board of Trade, up and down each day. Today it's up. July corn is up about 22 cents a bushel right now, 3% higher. Beans are trading 36 cents higher, 2.3% higher, and wheat is up about 2%. That's 13 cents per bushel. Today is, well, we've got an embarrassment of riches on our Farm to Your Belly calendar. Not only is it National Cheese Day, it is National Donut Day. I don't think those two go together. And it's also National Cognac Day. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Did you know that a new hotel, hooray, is opening in Chicago? In the 1920s era carbide and carbon building, there is a new hotel. Oh, let's find out a little bit about this. Here's Michael Firstman. He's the co-founder and creative director for Pendery Hotels and Resorts. Michael, you're on WGN. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Great to be here.
What a beautiful building. First of all, what a terrific location for you guys.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we couldn't say it any better. It's such an iconic piece of architecture, and in a city that appreciates architecture so much. It's really special to be here, and just thrilled to be open finally.
What's Pendery Hotels? What's your brand? Is that new to Chicago? What should we know about you?
We're new to Chicago. We've been around for about 5 years. So Pendery Hotels, it's a new luxury hotel brand. We build sophisticated, contemporary, high-energy luxury hotels with backed by a very good service culture. So our first brand that we launched under Montage International was Montage, which is 5+ star classic luxury. And we've taken that service culture and that attention to detail and infrastructure and how we take care of guests, and we've really created a more contemporary, stylish hotel experience around that. And we're growing. It's been really exciting to bring this to life. We're open in West Hollywood. We have a Pendery Hotel in San Diego. We have one in Baltimore. We open later this year in New York. And Chicago has been a city that we've been obsessing over, and you know, for years trying to figure out a way to create something special, and an opportunity came about really sort of through the pandemic with this amazing carbide and carbon building, and we jumped at the chance to create something special here.
So you got some floors? Is that what you did? Because the building's already been there. You've moved into that building, right?
Correct. Yeah, the building's been here. It dates back to 1929. It was actually another hotel for a bit, and for whatever reason, it traded hands, and we partnered with the new owner of the building, and we completely gutted and repositioned the hotel from top to bottom. So every space on the ground floor is new. We have a brand new French brasserie that's a high energy, really beautiful restaurant that's right on Michigan Ave. We have an incredible bar Pendery, that's got a double-sided fireplace and a great art program. It makes great classic cocktails. All the rooms have been refreshed, very sort of light, contemporary palette. The views are great. The natural light is great. So we really sort of, through painstaking detail, spent the last year kind of rejiggering this hotel and bringing it to life and creating something that we felt was befitting Chicago, that was stylish, that really felt luxe, and was a statement of hospitality that we'd all be very proud of.
Rooftop bar open?
Rooftop bar coming soon. We open later this month. So very excited for that. We're calling it Chateau Carbide. It's on our 24th floor where the building sets back. We've got outdoor space. We've got indoor space. We'll be doing a partnership with Whispering Angel and Moet to really have sort of a champagne bent to this space. But a really great space, incredible views. I think, as you mentioned, the location's so good. We're in the Loop. We're two blocks south of the river, right in between the river and Millennium Park. So really a great place to be.
230 North Michigan Avenue, Pendery Hotel in Chicago in the Carbide Building. So are you open now? Can I get a room tonight?
Yes, we are. So we opened last week. Everything except for the rooftop is open today. So restaurant, bar, all the meeting space, the rooms, our billiard gallery. So all the spaces within the hotel are up and running.
Yeah.
Our last to make it will be the rooftop, which we can't wait for.
One last thing. So you must have anticipated this even before the pandemic. Was there a thought about not opening this hotel at all because of the pandemic?
No, that never really crossed our mind. I mean, I think we take longer-term views when we open hotels. We want to be in the best cities and the best locations in the world. We really sort of plan and create a program and a product that will sort of stand the test of time. We hire exceptional people and really, you know, do everything we can to create a great service culture. And, you know, we have to sort of play the hand that we're dealt. We recognize that, unfortunately, this has been a really tough 18 months, not just for our industry, obviously for the world, and we're coming out of it. And, I think it was a nice time for us to sort of reset and refresh and bring some new ideas and some new concepts and ultimately now a new hotel to life. And we're really excited about kind of where things are now. The city's opening up. I think next week all restrictions are lifted.
Yep.
And we feel really confident kind of coming into summer and into fall as we're seeing group business come back to the city, as we're seeing people out and about. I mean, today I'm in Chicago today. It's a beautiful day. People yep. are outside. It's sunny. It's the energy right now feels great. And, we feel really excited about, capturing that and being a home to some great guests that want to experience Chicago in a really authentic way. So very, very proud and happy to be here.
Happy that you're here. As a Chicagoan, I like that we're steering people back downtown and that somebody even from out of town is willing to invest in it, because I think it's a beautiful city. It's going to be here forever, and it's never looked better. So, Michael, welcome to Chicago and Pendry Hotels. We're glad you're here.
Thanks, John. Appreciate all the support, and we love this city. So very, very proud of it and proud of this building and what we've brought to life here. So excited for everybody to come experience it.
24-karat gold leaf on the top, you know, the old Carbide Building, with a new hotel, pendry.com/Chicago.